Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are looking back at the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th, reviews of Scoob, Hammer, and Survive the Night, and our topic this week, does a movie need to have surprises to entertain you? And are predictable plots necessarily a bad thing? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
What's up, Aaron?
What's up? Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Woo! We are excited. You want to know why? You guys know why. Do you know why?
Actually, I don't even know why.
I don't know why.
We're going to be off for 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks.
Damn!
Woo! After this. So get ready for that. Though I will have a director's interview in relation to Survive the Night, which we're going to review in a little bit. Releasing at some point, but we're going to have 2 weeks off. Unless you're a Patreon supporter, we will have a new episode there next week. So you support us and you get another episode. Otherwise, we're taking 2 weeks off.
Because we all have places to be and things to do, you know?
Well, I mean, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not here is really what where the plan is. You know, we've been pretty dedicated, you know, via, I've seen a lot of podcasts are putting out like 3 or 4 episodes a week now. What?
No.
I realize you're stuck at home, but man, nobody wants to hear you that much.
We're not that dedicated.
No. I barely want to talk that much.
Nah, I barely want to hear you that much.
Right.
It all works out.
Nobody wants to hear me talk that much.
This is about all the talking I do for the entire week, and then I get to shut up for the rest of the week.
Are you guys a little ready for things to get back to some semblance of normal, at least?
Yeah, why not? Let's test things out. Let's see what we can do.
Amanda goes first. That's what I'm...
Just kidding. I'm scared of everything.
I said some semblance of normal, like where...
At like least, where you can go eat chips and queso in a restaurant?
I can't trust chips anymore. I think they're grabbing them with their hands, man. I see them with a little scooper, but they keep using their hand to scoop it into the scooper. So that's not really working for me at all. No. Thanks for ruining chips and queso, Amanda. I appreciate that.
I didn't do it. I washed my hands.
No, it's done. I'm not doing that again.
I'm ready for a little bit more normal. I'm also, you know, I'm also kind of happy being home. So because this whole thing hasn't been something for me where I've been stuck at home because I keep on having to go to work. But yeah, a little bit more normal. Seeing a few more people on the road might be a little nice. Every day feeling like the dawn of the dead is a little disheartening.
What's funny is I feel like most of the people listening to this haven't probably changed many of their habits because obviously we're movie and TV geeks. So we're probably watching a lot of TV and movies anyway. We just don't have, the only adventure we had would be going to the theater, which we don't have currently. So we're just watching stuff at home. That's really the big difference.
Yeah.
All right. Last news roundup for a couple of weeks. So here we go. The Umbrella Academy will return for season 2 on July 31st.
Sweet.
The Resident and Last Man Standing have been renewed for another season on Fox.
What?
Yeah, what do you mean, what? Yes.
I never even heard of those shows.
You've never heard of The Resident, which I've talked about many times on this show.
Well, we ignore you a lot.
I don't listen to you very often.
Last Man Standing is a Tim Allen show.
He still has a show?
He does. They were supposed to be the final season, but it got cut short, so they renewed it for season 9 so they could finish out proper.
Thanks, Obama.
The CW has delayed all original programming until 2021. That means your Supernatural finale still is going to be a little bit longer, John.
Mm.
It's going to happen. The Purge and Treadstone have both been canceled on the USA Network. Tom Hanks's new World War II film, Greyhound, will skip theaters and release exclusively to Apple Plus.
Man, I'm annoyed.
Boo. Rumors abound that we will actually see the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League in the near future. Thank you. Thank you, Obama. Disney is opening their parks with a disclaimer that you assume all risks regarding COVID-19, just like theaters could do. David Arquette is returning for Scream 5. Nev Campbell is considering it. Oh, this is kind of cool. Michael Bay is producing a pandemic thriller called Songbird, which starts shooting in 5 weeks while in lockdown. I'm really hoping things blow up because why not?
I was going to say, it's a Michael Bay movie. They have to explode. All of the medical facilities, all of a sudden, they're like, where are we going to put people? The hospital just blew up.
And that's in the first 5 minutes.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's the opening.
I hope so. And then I hope Optimus Prime shows up and just steps on everyone that's left. All right. And then Timothy Olyphant has been cast in the upcoming season of The Mandalorian.
Yay.
Yeah, this is really cool news, though. Star Trek Strange New Worlds will happen. It's getting a whole series. Anson Mount will star as Captain Pike in this. A lot of fans were just loving him in Discovery, so that's really exciting for them. We did lose beloved comedian Fred Willard this past week. That's very sad. It seems Quibi failed already, according to the raw numbers. So if you were buying into that, might want to drop your stocks. And a recent analysis showed that Netflix saved its audience, on average, 9.1 days worth of commercials in 2019. That's how much stuff we're watching. Oh, yeah. And this just happened. Batwoman, the CW show, which is going on season 2, is going to recast the lead role of Batwoman because Ruby Rose has elected to not return for season 2. Huge news. That's kind of shocking.
No one's going to believe me, but I feel really bad for her about that.
Why do you feel bad?
Didn't you used to send her hate mail or something?
I mean, not hate mail, just...
Oh my goodness.
Okay, I'm going to edit that.
Yeah, that would definitely get you
that was dark. That
written
was,
off.
That was dark. So we'll leave it in. It'll be a nice long bleep, but everybody will just wonder how dark could John really take that.
Okay. So dark.
That's even better. You should leave it in with the, oh, I'm going to edit that. Well, no, I feel really bad for her because, you know, this was a really big role for her and it was something that was going to put her out into the public more often. And it was a good chance for her to be someone who could eventually win me, someone like me over for her. But again, it's a shame that something that was such a good role for her turned into obviously something problematic.
Well, and they didn't disclose what the exact reason was. The article that I had read about was claiming that there are sources, and it's obviously not confirmed, that it was not in relation to her really serious injury that could have paralyzed her, apparently, which I did not realize the seriousness of it. But she seemed to be, at least her statement was very kosher and like, I want to thank all of them. It's been great, blah, 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 blah. So it is really strange for the lead casting to be able to pull out. And don't they have the contract extended for more than one season, I would assume? So wouldn't they have had to negotiate that with her?
They would either. I mean, because she did have, like, she had injuries from a stunt performance gone awry. But they said, like you said, it wasn't because of that. But they would have to agree to it.
Right.
I got to figure there's a bunch of conversations that have. I mean, whatever her reasons are. I mean, they're her reasons, but I'm sure she has good reasons. But she said that she really respected the crew and the cast and, you know, nothing negative there. But on the same token, she's getting out of a contract, so she probably has to say all the nice stuff. But I don't know. There's no indication as to what caused it, no.
If they sign the dotted line, she doesn't, I guess, necessarily have to do anything unless the dotted line said so.
There's lots of actors that are held to their contracts when they want out of them. So, I mean, they could have held it to the fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did think it was really cool that in response, it wasn't anything negative towards her. There wasn't any animosity. And they did say that they're excited to release the new casting role, which will still be a member of the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, good for them as far as that's concerned. I just feel, again, I'm disappointed for her in this whole idea. Hopefully, whatever it is that came through doesn't have too much of an effect on her life.
Well, something that really gets me excited, I don't care what anybody thinks, but I'm pumped for the Justice League Zack Snyder cut. I'm glad it's going to happen. I mean, I know it's not technically confirmed, but Zack Snyder's done everything but confirm it on his social media. He's like, oh, yeah, that exists. Oh, yeah, we watched it at our house. Oh, yeah, I'm taking this thing around. And I'm showing it to friends. I really don't have much of a doubt at this point. It exists and it's going to happen. And what a cool little tool that would be to either sell HBO Max or maybe for a fun little theater event, you know, to reopen theaters. I mean, there's a couple ways.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either one of those would be pretty great. I think using it as a way to say sell HBO Max. Oh, my God. People will lose their mind over that.
I'd get on board. Take me. And I'm very happy for Star Trek fans because Anson Mount, great actor. And by all accounts of people that I've talked to that like Star Trek Discovery, he's been the best thing on that show. So for him to get his own show instead of them continuing just without him, I think is great news. And it makes me want to watch it, even though I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, because I love Anson Mount, because Hell on Wheels is a great show that is very unappreciated.
Yeah, Hell on Wheels was a really great show that I really liked with him in it. I watched Immortals, which was, you take a great character, like a character actor like Anson Mount, and you take away his ability to speak. Dumb.
Yeah, that was really dumb.
Yeah, that makes the character Black Bolt very hard to portray on screen. So it's hard to connect with that whole idea. But to see him as Pike would be pretty great. Now, I haven't watched Discovery, but in the times that I have watched old Star Trek and even the newer Abrams movies, Pike's been on there. And to see a story around that character, I think is a pretty good idea.
I feel like I have some glimmer of hope for the future of television, that it's going to come back in a reasonable amount of time because of the renewal of some of the shows, despite if you're interested in them or not, it at least makes me feel good that the renewals are still happening.
Yeah, they're spending money on them. Like, I don't know when we're going to shoot these things, but we're going to have it ready to go. They can do scripts. They can do a lot of scripts.
Yeah, they can
right
do
now.
A lot of work.
Yep, you can do writer's room from home, remote. That's not a big deal. So now we're going to move into a significant anniversary, because Friday the 13th, one of my favorite all-time horror franchises, turned 40 years old on May 9th. That was when the first film released in 1980, the movie that made summer camps terrifying for millions. And because people often forget, that was the film where Mom was actually the murderer. Jason Voorhees wasn't really a slasher until part two. I kind of want to ask you guys, I mean, you know, I know how this affected me as a kid. This is one of the first horror movie I ever saw in a theater. This was a rated R movie, and I remember seeing it with my mom and, you know, taking me to the outdoor to see it and me running around telling everybody that it's my birthday, because it was my birthday when this came out. And so it's a very influential movie to me. I've seen every one of them in the theater, even the bad ones, and it's definitely like a part of my life. But did this movie ever affect you guys? I mean, did it ever affect how you went camping? Do you ever go camping and think of Friday the 13th? I mean, anything along those lines? Or has this movie affected you in any way, shape, or form, or you're not really a fan of the franchise?
It's actually funny, because when this movie came out, I was living in Panama at the time. And though, like, Jason was something that we understood could not possibly happen, we did have our own story of a character that was kind of like Jason. We called him Wild Willie. And again, it was something like a scout leader who went nuts and killed his whole scout group on accident. And then if you were outside and you heard seven chops because he killed seven kids, if you heard seven chops against wood, that means you better get inside pretty quick. And because Wild Willie was out there looking for kids to kill.
Wild Willie? So,
yeah.
Okay.
What's wrong with Wild Willie?
I don't know. Just Wild Willie. All right. Cool. Scary name. Wild Willie. I wouldn't be afraid of that. If somebody's like, "Oh, Wild Willie's coming." I'm like, really?
You know what? When you're running around 8, 9, 10 years old, you'd be scared of Wild Willie.
You'd be amazed. Probably not. But keep going. It sounds like Wet Willie. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Wet Willie the whole time.
Look at Aaron. Aaron's so cool. He doesn't get scared of anything. Woo!
No, if you tell me, like, Jason Voorhees, that's a scary name. Wild Willie sounds like the cool kid that might take you to the water park.
No.
Okay. Okay. Now continue your story. I cut you off. Sorry.
Anyhow, so yeah, we had stories like that. And it was something that probably was born from the idea of watching Friday the 13th. And I remember watching them, because I didn't watch them in order. I watched them in the order I can get them in. And I remember finally seeing the first one after seeing probably the second and the third. And I was like, wait, what's this? Why is the old lady killing everybody? And it was really upsetting to me.
Why is the old lady killing everybody?
Well, she was old and she was a lady.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Indeed.
For me, I wouldn't say necessarily that the influence has come from horror films, from Friday the 13th directly to me. It's been kind of a combination of the different franchises, but the Friday the 13th franchise has inspired films for a very long time. I mean, even if you look back, just for an example, in Scream, the iconic moment with Drew Barrymore, where she has to guess for her survival what the name of the killer was. That was part of the guessing game. And so there's this tapping into that franchise as such an iconic reference that people will understand what it's from. And it also created a shift because you had Halloween that came out prior to that, which started doing horror movies in a much more very creepy, stalkery, slow-moving type of way. Mm-hmm. And Friday the 13th, which was much more like, we're going to take a low-budget indie flick, kind of like Halloween, where we want to scare people with an actual person who's just terrifying and make it super bloody. And we're going to ruin all of children's dreams for a very long time when they decide to go back to camp, because nobody's going to want to sleep in a tent out in the woods ever again, because you have no idea when Jason's going to come. You definitely are a little bit scared about the water in a different way from Jaws. But there's been so much influence and effect that that franchise has had in so many different ways.
Yeah. And I remember when I saw that movie and when it was revealed, spoiler alert, that it was the mom was the killer. It was such a cool reveal. And to see that this woman is this gory axe murderer. And then the next, what people don't remember about the early films, especially the first four, is that Jason was not this slow moving, you know, like he is in the later films, like Kane Hodder played him, where he isn't just this lumbering Michael Myers-esque figure, which is the later films for sure. But the first few movies, like he was running, he was moving fast, he was sprinting at different times. I mean, he was a real threat and really terrifying in that respect. And as the movies went on, they changed kind of how they played him, and he just became, no matter how fast you run, Jason will always catch you, because apparently he's got underground tunnels, as we learned in the remake. And that's how he
I
always,
love that bit.
That's how he always sneaks up on people. It explained it all. You did love that bit?
I love that bit. That's, like the whole fact that they took the time to explain how Jason gets around so quickly was underground tunnels that he uses against you. Yeah, I love that bit.
Okay, fair enough. It was an interesting choice. It was an interesting choice. But you know, all of that was just a really, really a fascinating way to take it. And it was different from how it was similar to Halloween. I agree with what it wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Halloween, but they really kind of changed the format a little bit and just made Jason almost this hero. You know, he just wanted people to stop humping in his park. That's really all he wanted. Like, just stop coming to my camp and humping, because that's how I died. Oh, you
stop smoking grass. Exactly. Humping.
Think about how many of those tropes have been reused in such a similar manner since that franchise. And I'm not saying that there weren't any that came before it that did that, because there's plenty of raw 70s horror films that have done that too. But Friday the 13th, I want to say normalized it in a way that it was more accepting to the general public, instead of horror films being for these weird, creepy people in their mom's basement or something. It allowed for other people to kind of branch into this genre of film, and also made you question, okay, why does he go after those people? And it makes you think about it. Okay, well, the implication comes from the way society reacts to young individuals having premarital sex.
The sex is how we call it.
The sex, of course. But I mean, you start thinking about it, there's a lot of value behind it too, in a very dark way. And then you start to think about how the literal Friday the 13th, not that 13 wasn't an unlucky number before it, because it was, but when you start thinking about Friday the 13th, people are still like, I'm not going to do too much on that day. I think I'll stay home, because you don't want to do too much if you're a little bit, what is it? Not conspiracy or supernatural fearing.
Superstitious.
Superstitious, that's the word.
Conspiracy theory. I think Jason was on the grassy knoll. That's what I think happened. Why didn't anybody come up with that idea? That would be pretty fantastic.
Oh, they will. Give
that's
us some
why
time.
He disappeared. That's why he never went home. He was on the run. He killed JFK. Traveling. Yeah, exactly. Oh man, time traveling Jason Voorhees, that'd be fun.
What, they already did Jason Voorhees in space. Why not time traveling?
That was just such a weird movie. I know some people love it. I don't understand. It's got some cool bits, but it's also got, it's dumb overall.
It's also got dumb.
Yeah, it's just dumb. I love this franchise. It's something that's always spoke to me. And I still, to this day, you can't go camping. I go camping a lot throughout the year. And you can't go without somebody at some point making a Friday the 13th comment of some sort. I mean, especially if you're tent camping. If you're tent camping, there's always somebody, and somebody always goes,
well, they do it wrong.
I know, it's kill, 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 ma, 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 whatever, but it sounds like, that's what it sounds like. And they will do it all the time while you're sleeping, while you're trying to sleep and try to get in your head. And you, they do it wrong with me because I'm like, it gets me excited. It's actually the wrong call you want to make with me.
We also haven't even talked about how iconic it was that Jason Voorhees wasn't the first Friday the 13th killer. It was his mom, because she was so protective of her child that she was willing to go to those lengths to get revenge for her kid.
Yeah, because they were humping. We talked about this. That's why.
Well, we talked about the humping and everything. But I mean, just that twist was a really clever one that you would have expected that he was the one who was coming back and doing all of this right away.
True. And that was a good diversion tactic. Although I will say I was glad that Jason Voorhees came in the second one, because he's a much cooler.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Murderer. I mean, if murderers can be cool.
I don't know, like Kevin Bacon taking that arrow to the throat the way he did.
That was good. That's good.
Oh my God. That's one of the more disturbing sights.
Well, the sleeping bag is a good one.
Yeah. Slamming the sleeping bag against the tree. That's a favorite. That became like part of the game, because we would go see him in the theater and we would always just be looking for the coolest kill. I mean, that was, and I hate to say, I mean, I'm sure today that, I don't know, somebody frowns, it's not politically correct or whatever, but that's why we went. We didn't care what the story was. You could have literally just said, people show up, Jason kills them. We're good. You know, no problem. Critics never liked those movies. They got it wrong, because we were there for the murder, the death, the kill. That was why we were checking out. Like, I can't believe he did that. I can't believe he just threw that lady through the window. Da 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 da. Oh, she's going to walk right by the dead body. You idiot. You know, all those things.
Oh, he just squeezed her head like a grape.
Oh, and then the hockey mask. People don't even remember that the hockey mask didn't even come around till movie three. That wasn't right. Part of the early films. That was from movie three. And it was just shocking how iconic that is now. Because if you ask people that say they're fans, but they're not, they're like, oh, yeah, Jason Voorhees has always been the killer and always wore that hockey mask. I'm like, well, you didn't watch the franchise. That's how you know a newbie.
Yeah, or they didn't do it in order. And I mean, even thinking about that mask and how popular that became, people will still use that as their Halloween costume.
It's quick and easy, man.
You know, a couple of years ago for Halloween, there's a couple of guys who were going around the neighborhoods. One of them would be standing out in front of, just like, you'd turn around and they're standing in somebody's yard just staring at you. And one of them would always be dressed as Michael Myers and the other one was dressed as Jason.
I like it.
And they're just, that's they would great. Just like not go, they're not getting like candy or anything. But they're these grown men who are just walking around the neighborhood, and then they'll find a good spot to just stand there and stare at you if they see people out in front of their house, and they'll just be all costumed up, and it's pretty creepy. I got a couple pictures of them. It's awesome.
And the kids probably go up there and taunt them, right? Like,
no.
No?
No. I mean, teenagers probably, but not little ones.
Okay, well, let's move on. Our show is independently funded, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. We put out two Patreon-exclusive podcasts per month on Patreon. And while we're off for the next 2 weeks, there will be a new episode there.
You're welcome.
we just released one for Bad Movie Night, which is we look at a movie that critics didn't like, but we like, well, this particular film I liked, and that was Angel Has Fallen. And, you know, we've got a lot of other episodes. There's Space Jams on there. The original Bad Boys is in there. There's a lot of stuff. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. So now that you understand what it is, if you want to support the show and get a new episode next week, which we get a lot more candid and a lot more, we're more open there than we can necessarily be here. It's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And we thank you to everybody that does support the show. All right, let's go to our spoiler-free reviews for the week, starting with...
All right, Aaron, you checked out Scoob! Scooby and the gang face their most challenging mystery ever, a plot to unleash the ghost dog Cerberus, which means spotted in Greek, I think it is, upon the world. As a race to stop this dog-pocalypse, the gang discovers Scooby has an epic destiny greater than anyone ever imagined. This is directed by Tony Cervone, who has a huge, huge list of cartoons that he's done and over time. Matt Lieberman and Adam Skitzkel are the writers of the screenplay, who, again, they show some really good love to genre films. So between the director and these writers, Aaron, how did they do?
Okay, so the first 30 minutes is really an origin story. You get to meet Shaggy as a kid, Scooby as a pup, which means I'm telling you the dog is 200 years old when you see him in the cartoon form. But regardless, because apparently dogs live forever in this franchise, where they kind of do a meet cute, you know, over food. And Shaggy doesn't have any friends. Scooby's looking apparently for an owner because he's a stray, and they both love to put weird stuff on sandwiches. So they bond over this at the beach. They like to eat sand. It's weird. But they come together, and that's a beautiful story. Then they meet Fred and Velma and Daphne, and they go solve a crime or a mystery inside a perceived haunted house on Halloween. All this feels very Scooby-Doo, right? Then they actually recreate the opening credits of the original TV show. It's a fantastic job that they did recreating that. And then after that, Simon Cowell shows up. Yeah. Yeah, you heard me.
What?
Yeah, you heard me. Simon Cowell, he showed up. And he wants to invest in Mystery Inc. because now the kids are growing up and, you know, they're trying to take Mystery Inc. wide. Public's trying to branch out. They're trying to be a business, you know, solve mysteries on the official stock exchange, I guess. And he'll invest, but only if everybody can justify what they do. And nobody can seem to explain exactly what it is that Shaggy and Scooby-Doo do. Scooby-Doo do, Scooby-Doo did, Scooby-Doo done. So they part ways in ridiculous fashion. They go to a bowling alley and they're doing a little bowling when they get sucked up into a ship. And then the entire movie turns into Scooby's pursuit of destiny. The Blue Falcon shows up. Dino Mutt shows up. There's a whole lot of things going on. There's a dastardly villain chasing them, all while they're trying to fulfill Scooby-Doo's destiny. The first 30 minutes are very much a Scooby-Doo movie. The last hour is a Pixar meets Marvel and forgets that it's got Scooby-Doo in it movie. So I would say the writers did a fine job, a wonderful job, the first half hour. The other two-thirds of the movie, I don't know what the hell I was watching, but it wasn't Scooby-Doo.
Huh. That's rather disappointing. Well, all right, so this cast, you've got Will Forte playing Shaggy Rogers, Mark Wahlberg as Blue Falcon, Jason Isaacs as Dick Dastardly, which I love that name for some reason. I don't know why. Gina Rodriguez as Velma, Zac Efron, Amanda Seyfried. And then I got really shocked to see that Captain Caveman shows up, and he's played by Tracy Morgan.
Does a very bad job, by the way. He's not very good at Captain Caveman. Sorry.
What?
So I'm going to disappoint you right there. The biggest, what? Yeah, and Frank Welker does Scooby-Doo. He's done Scooby-Doo for years. You've already heard his Scooby-Doo. There's nothing different there, right?
Right.
We can agree. He does a fantastic Scooby-Doo, or at least as good as you can get without the original, because I think he used to do Fred back in the old days, and then he, I guess, got promoted to Scooby-Doo. I don't know how the voice acting world works.
Well, but, somebody died.
Okay, that works too.
I mean, you go from Fred, who's, you know, kind of a third or fourth wheel, to Scooby-Doo. I mean, his name is on the show. That's a promotion.
That's a promotion, sure. But the biggest change in terms of, and everybody's really, really good otherwise. The voice actors are very well done. The biggest change is from Shaggy. You know, Matthew Lillard did the live action Shaggy, and then they started using him for Shaggy in the cartoons. You know this, John. You're a big cartoon fan. I don't know if Amanda, if you knew that or not. So he's been doing Shaggy, the voice of Shaggy, for several years now. And I have to say, next to Casey Kasem, he's the best Shaggy. Like he's easily number two. And I would say it's close. You know, I think he does a fantastic job. Why they replaced him with Will Forte, who does fine, but it feels like Will Forte got paid to do this, where Matthew Lillard always felt like he really wanted to be Shaggy and whenever in his voice work. So that is distracting in itself. But I don't think Forte does a bad job. It's just not his forte. Thank you. Been working on this all day. Thank you.
Oh, all right, we're all going to go home. Y'all have a good night. Thanks for being here, people.
Oh, baby.
Sorry. Well, I mean, that all sounds like it's fine and dandy.
Voices were good.
Sound, Yeah, the voices were good. Okay, so you know what? Let's just get right down to it. $10 a full price admission. What do you give it?
I give it $4.50.
Rap row.
Yeah. It is not. Man, they should have called it boob because that's what I felt like for buying it.
That was a good joke.
Thanks. I got to start just coming up with them instead of thinking it out. This is a movie you could not get me more excited for. This is the epitome of made for me. This franchise is my next to Spider-Man, my favorite cartoon, I guess, comic, however you want to word it. It's my favorite animated franchise. Okay. I love the Spider-Man cartoons. And honestly, I'd probably say the cartoons of Scooby-Doo I like more than the Spider-Man cartoons because I prefer the comics for Spider-Man. I love Scooby-Doo. I mean, I don't know why I love it. It's about a talking dog who's a chicken shit. And basically all he wants to do is eat and not really solve any crimes because he's always running. Then he accidentally kind of solves them. But really, he's just I just like the dog. He's funny. And he hangs out with a pot smoking, but doesn't really smoke it. Best friend who just loves him to death, even though they're both cowards. I don't know why I love this show so much, but I always have. This was made for me, and yet they failed to make it for people like me. It's a movie about Scooby-Doo that for at least an hour forgets that it's a movie about Scooby-Doo in terms of what the whole show was. Supernatural mysteries, having goofy fun, being somewhat grounded, but also a little crazy. Like, it just forgot everything. It's just not a Scooby-Doo movie. And I was monumentally disappointed. I do think if you got little kids that don't know the franchise, they're probably going to have a great time. It definitely isn't for Scooby-Doo fans of old. Sorry. I kind of got wordy on that, but Scooby-Doo is like, I'm really passionate about this. I've been so excited to see this for a long time and I was really disappointed, but the animation's really good. So there's that.
Oh yeah, that means a lot though, from coming from you.
Yeah. So Hammer is another one. It's an independent film that comes out in June, right, Amanda? June.
Correct. 5th? That would be June, what's the 6th?
Sixth.
No, 5th.
5th. Okay, so I was right. The yes. First thing. So Hammer is about a father who faces a personal crisis when he discovers his estranged son is fleeing a botched drug deal. The two men embark on a violent odyssey that grapples with themes of fatherhood, family, and fate. Stars Will Patton and Mark O'Brien. Now, this sounds like a pretty straightforward thriller, but with a whole father-son dynamic. Is it more thriller or character drama?
I would say that it's more character drama. It really focuses on our protagonist, really, which is Will Patton's character, and his desire to, or I guess it would be more of the complexity in his decision of trying to help his son who he's kind of estranged from and get involved in the situation or back off and protect himself. And it really starts to talk about the dynamics from parenthood and what length someone will go to protect their child.
Hmm.
And family in general, the protection for family. So I would say that the story isn't really anything that's going to surprise you. There was a couple moments that were like, oh, that was a nice little turn. And you had some diversion, you know, at some point. But it's fairly straightforward, but it's definitely about the characters and that relationship and makes you really think about our perceptions of situations and, you know, those family members who have committed a crime and the effect that that has on a family.
So it's not really so much this drug deal's gone bad and how's daddy going to get me out of this? It sounds like it's more of dad's trying to determine if he even should and how far will he go to get him out?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. They kind of venture into this journey together because the father doesn't really take too long of a moment's notice to decide that he's going to help his child, but they have a history and his son has a history of crime. And so him and his wife, you know, Chris, his mom, did not handle his crime the first time very well and kind of broke the relationship and the strain between them. And the father realizes when he's in this moment, I've got to do something to help my kid. And so they go on this journey together and they have to figure out, how am I going to get out of this? How are we going to keep people safe, ourselves safe? you know, what are the details of what's going on here? Because there's some pieces that are a little bit left unexplained and they figure out along their journey. I mean, it's a little bit of both.
Any standout performances in this?
Honestly, all of them were really great. I enjoyed them. I really enjoyed the two main casting because you have Will Patton, who's doing the really engaging father performance. You know, I really felt like he was someone who had the drive for Mark O'Brien's character, for Chris.
He's such a good actor, too. Will Patton was in Blood on Her Name, which I saw a few months back. I just love Will Patton, and I wish he'd be in more stuff.
I was going to mention that to you. I didn't know if you had noticed that he was one of the people that was in that film, but he was also in Remember the Titans, Armageddon, and if you saw the recent Halloween film with Jamie Lee Curtis, he was in that, too.
He's a sheriff a lot.
Yeah. But Mark O'Brien is playing a character that's, you're not really sure how good or bad he is through some of it. Like, you want to root for him because he seems like he wasn't all bad in what was going on in this botched drug deal. But at the same time, you're like, okay, but he was in a botched drug deal. And his dad seems to have a little bit of a negative perception of him. He barely believes this kid at first. And so that's like part of his journey. His dad's journey is like, what do I even believe?
That sounds interesting. I remember you got the screener for this and I was debating if I wanted to watch it because it seemed so rote and kind of, I've seen this story before like 20 times, but the casting is what piqued my interest. Then you watch the trailer is really good. So I was hoping that it was as good as that. So you're saying, is it, it's riveting throughout. Are there any issues with it?
I didn't have any issues with it. The ending of the film kind of, it was a weird, I don't want to say it negatively. It was a weird ending to it, but I was good with it. But the trajectory to the end, you kind of maybe, typically you're going to expect something differently to come through the end of this film based on, and it's so funny we're talking about this because of predictability. Mm-hmm. You would predict that it would go one way. And the film is really so much about the, I don't know, the subconscious conversations they're trying to have with you.
I'm really excited for this. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Hammer?
I'm going to give this one $7. Oh, and it's got a great villain, like a great bad guy.
Ooh.
He was really like, he has the face of a bad guy.
So he looks like John.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. I think it was John.
And handsome. Okay. And the last movie is another one that's hitting video on demand this Friday, which will be the 22nd of May, Survive the Night.
So this is one that Aaron saw, and it's about a doctor and his family that are held hostage by a wounded gunman and his unhinged brother. And really, before we start talking about this story, there's a question I genuinely have to ask you, and it's not intended to be mean. Bruce Willis and Chad Michael Murray star as co-leads in this?
Yeah.
How the hell did it work? Like, what is Murray like these days?
So he plays Rich, and his dad is Frank, and Frank is a, you know, retired sheriff, typical Bruce Willis character in many respects. And I'll be perfectly honest. As soon as I saw Chad Michael Murray's name, I'm like, oh boy. Now, I'm not a One Tree Hill fan, so I don't know. Maybe he's great on that show. I have no idea. But my initial reaction was, this like Lorenzo Lamas? I don't know what, you know, where Chad Michael Murray is currently career-wise. So I didn't know what to expect. He's actually pretty good in the movie. So I don't have any problems with him. He's playing a disgraced doctor who basically has to move back home, which is already sad, with his family. And he's going to take up being a veterinarian because he can't really be a doctor anymore for reasons that are explained in the film. His dad's obviously kind of embarrassed of whatever he's done, which gets explained throughout the movie. And so you have that dynamic where, you know, typical dad isn't really proud of where son is. And then you have the son is just trying to put his life back together. Typical father-son relationship, honestly, but there's some mitigating factors. I thought they were both... Surprisingly, I will be the first to admit, Bruce Willis, who I used to be top tier, number one fan, and have kind of withered off of that a little bit because, he's had a one too many, I just showed up roles in the last few years, but he did a fine, he did a good job here. He was typical Bruce Willis. He can do a lot with just his presence. Like Bruce Willis has a presence, and right. I think it's tough for anybody to really match that, but he did match it.
They both seemed kind of brooding in the, with their raspy voices and stuff in the trailer. And I thought that was really funny that they both acted that way. It almost felt like Chad was trying to emulate Bruce because of, you know, that's his father. They would have some similar mannerisms.
No, I don't. Actually, in the movie, I don't think he's like him at all. He's completely his own person.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously like an action thriller, right?
It's a thriller. It's not really an action thriller. I really thought that was going to be too, because you just see Bruce Willis's name. You assume there's going to be some crazy set piece where he drives off a canyon or something. But no, it's very much a thriller of how are they going to get through the night and trying to draw this thing out until they get a chance to break free.
Any brutal fight scenes that come with that?
I mean, the last half hour is really like cat and mouse, because they're really trying to formulate a plan to get his family out safe, Chad Michael Murray's family out safe, as well as Bruce Willis is trying to pull the assist, because it's really Chad Michael Murray is the star, but Bruce Willis gets a few licks in, and Shea Buchner is the main villain here, and he is a very volatile, uncompromising, kind of insane villain who is very protective of his brother, but he does a lot of things throughout the movie where I'm like, oh, he really did that. Because a lot of times in movies, they won't do those things.
So they took some risks.
There's definitely a couple surprises. Not, while it is a predictable plot, it's not quite completely predictable. Following the theme of the whole episode.
Leading into my next question. We're talking predictable plot devices as today's topic. Did Survive the Night lean into that in terms of the story?
Yeah, I mean, it you kind of get the gist of what the movie's going to be, and it's just a matter of, is it entertaining? I was entertained. That's really what matters. But there were at least two surprises where I went, oh, I can't believe they did that, which is always a nice feat, and it fits the story. It works.
Awesome. So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving Survive the Night?
I give it $6. You know, I definitely think it's worth the rental and checking out on video on demand. And I will say, this movie, it's important to note, was shot in 9.5 days.
Oh, wow.
Days. I mean, it doesn't look like it, but it was shot in 9.5 days. So when the interview comes out with Matt Escandari, who's the director, and he has been on our podcast a couple years ago for another film that he had, be sure to check that out, because it's kind of interesting how they did that.
That sounds incredible.
Okay, guys, let's go to some new releases. We're going to get to the topic. The movies that are coming out over the next couple weeks. The first one is Inheritance, video on demand on May 22nd. A patriarch of a wealthy and powerful family suddenly passes away, leaving his wife and daughter with a shocking secret inheritance that threatens to unravel and destroy their lives. Stars Lily Collins and Simon Pegg. And also should point out that Survive the Night comes out that same day too.
And then also on the 22nd, The Lovebirds is coming to Netflix. This was a film that was set to be at the South by Southwest Film Festival for 2020. Aaron and I were really excited to go see that one, but we'll see it on Netflix, and maybe we can do like a Netflix watch party together or something.
COVID's a bitch.
On the brink of breaking up, a couple gets unintentionally embroiled in a bizarre murder mystery. As they get closer to clearing their names and solving the case, they need to figure out how they and their relationship can, oh, weird, survive the night. It stars Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae.
What a unpredictable twist that was.
Well done.
That was pretty fun.
Well done.
On May the 29th, we have the Vast of Night. In the twilight of the 1950s, a fateful night in New Mexico, a young switchboard operator, Faye, and a charismatic radio DJ, Everett, discover a strange audio frequency that could change a small town's future forever. And this stars Sierra McCormick, Jake Horowitz, and Gail Cronauer, which is also a great game of people I've never heard of.
And then we also have on June 5th, coming to VOD, as I mentioned already, The Hammer, where a father faces a personal crisis when he discovers his estranged son fleeing a botched drug deal. The two men embark on a violent odyssey that grapples with themes of fatherhood, family, and fate.
I just want to point out that, John, it was even in the format, the date. And she still was like, fifth, sixth, I'm not sure.
I for some reason, I have it in my head that the sixth was on a Friday.
It's okay. Calendars are goofy. All right. Let's.
Time doesn't work anymore. What is a day anyway?
There's truth to that. Let's go to our topic. All right, from the outset in topic, let's talk about predictable plots. We had this conversation. We were talking about Angel Has Fallen on our Patreon episode, and Amanda brought up how predictable the plot in Angel Has Fallen is. And my argument is, I don't know why that matters, because I was thrilled. I couldn't believe, yes, we know Gerard Butler is going to figure out who set him up. And we know as soon as they show you who's cast as certain characters, you know they're the villains, because dude's always a villain. You know who I'm talking about if you've seen Angel Has Fallen. So does a movie really need surprises to entertain you? And is it fair to say a movie or TV series is predictable if we just so happen to watch way more entertainment than anyone else? Is that really fair to call something predictable? Because we've seen a bazillion TV shows and movies where Joe Average might see a couple a year. So they're pleasantly surprised. And we're like, man, I saw that coming. So does predictable really matter so much?
Maybe they should get out more often.
John, you go. You
maybe
haven't had
they can't
talk,
right now.
You haven't had to talk in a while. What do you think?
I'm kind of with you, because it sounds like you're on the side of it not mattering so much. And I'm not really there either. Now, does it always not matter? I think there are situations in which if you have some failings in production or some failings in action, if you have some failings in the overall entire product you're seeing, then yeah, predictability does start to become a downfall of the whole thing, because in essence, you're not enjoying everything you're seeing. So is it necessary to surprise you at every single turn? No, but does it give you, but is it an indication that something may not be working? Yes.
And I have to say something I had not considered, and I'm willing to admit that maybe it was something I should have considered, is that I do tend to find things more predictable than others. Even people who watch a lot of movies, they're not as bothered by predictable plot points or, you know, just red herrings, which I'll talk about those. But I do tend to find them more predictable than others. And I don't know that it's necessarily because I watch more movies than other people, because there are plenty of people that I've talked to that have watched significantly more films than I have, like Aaron, for example, who don't get as bothered by it. And so it's just like a personal thing for me. But in some cases, I think that you don't always need the surprises to actually surprise you, but you should at least feel entertained by them. And you should never feel like it's lazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to do this just because I know I can get away with it.
Like a cat's in the cupboard. Like, why is that cat in the cupboard? I don't understand. You open the cupboard door and the cat jumped out. Who put the cat in the cupboard? That's a stupidest
thing. Why was it there? What sense did it make?
That's just a lame surprise.
Yeah. And I mean, there's certain things that even though it might have worked out to be really cool, the lead up, the build up to that moment was so lazy in the way it was written that it was predictable from like the first moment. And that was the problem I had, for example, with Angel Has Fallen. It wasn't that they had an unpredictable twist or had a predictable twist. It was just that it shouldn't have been that predictable that early on.
Okay. So here's how I take it. Okay. As a film critic, find my reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and on the HollywoodOutsider.com. As a film critic, a lot of times, if I write a review for a movie like Bad Boys for Life or something along those lines, people will say that I'm not critical enough because I will give the plot a pass because it's been done before. Well, I hate to break it to you, but every plot for the majority of the world has been done before. You've got exceptions, Inception. Okay, cool. But the majority of especially cop movies have been done before. Murder mysteries, femme fatales, whatever. Romantic comedies, all the same damn movie for the most part.
Basically, someone's cheating and the love story is exactly. They're getting together.
Someone lies. Someone, you know, looked at the wrong piece of pie the wrong way.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. There's so much. So to me, personally, I think calling a movie predictable is predictable at this point. I really just get annoyed with it. And here's one example I like to use is that a lot of, I've seen this a lot, okay, and I'm not picking on fan bases, but I am going to pick on a fan base. Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think most, all their plots are freaking the same. I think they're
basically
all, I think most superhero movies are pretty much the same.
Kind of cut and paste.
But you'll constantly hear Marvel diehards say that the a lot of the DC films, their plots are ridiculous or they're absurd or, you know, there's this dumb thing or that dumb thing. I'm like, well, there's a whole lot of dumb things in your movies, too. I don't know how you can pick apart story-wise, you know, whatever. But you can pick apart. You don't like those story elements. But to say that they're predictable isn't really fair when you're comparing it to Marvel and all their movies feel very similar and very much like a almost like a cardboard cutout. I mean, they're all kind of uniform. So to me, that those kind of arguments don't really hold weight. And I'm not a big fan of them because predictable doesn't mean anything. You know, I can say that those plots are predictable and a lot of them are the same, but I still love those movies. And it's not because of the plot necessarily. It's because of the execution. It's the pacing. It's the casting. It's the writing. It's the blah, 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 blah. All that stuff matters. All that stuff comes together and matters. And a movie can be predictable and extremely entertaining. The Last Boy Scout, it's not even a good movie, but it's entertaining.
What? And, how dare you?
I mean, in terms of if you take it from a from a comparison to art that most people will expect it to be held up to, it's not technically a good movie. I think it's a very entertaining movie. I would give it a high score because I am thoroughly entertained. I can tell you the first minute I watched that movie how it was going to end, but
head or gut.
Okay, maybe not that part. But the majority of the movie, you can guess. Most cop movies, you walk into a Marvel movie, you kind of know how it's going to end. Superhero's going to conquer all. Okay. Does that make it any less entertaining? I don't think so. I just don't think so. I think it's kind of ridiculous how often I hear the word predictable and it doesn't matter to me. I mean, predictable to me is, I don't consider it predictable. Boring. That's what I don't like. Don't be boring. You can show me the same beats I've seen in 12 different, look how many franchise films, the same damn movie, rinse and repeat, yet still entertaining because the pacing's great. The casting's great. You love the characters. You love the scenario. It doesn't really matter what the plot. James Bond is the same movie every movie. Every movie is the same. And I love them because they're entertaining as hell. It's not predictable. It's overused. And honestly, it's abused. It's just, I'm tired of hearing it, to be honest.
It's one thing to say that a film is predictable and it knows it's predictable versus a film that's predictable and tries to not be predictable and fails in it. And that's where I get frustrated. I get frustrated in a film where it's like Fast and the Furious, you know, it's going to be really crazy, wild, absurd plot devices that make no sense. You have no idea how they decided to make that work, but you don't care because you're entertained. But they have not tried to make you believe like they don't think that you already know what's going to happen. We do. They know that. They don't care. We don't care. We're all fine with it.
They definitely don't care.
But my problem is when you have films that are like trying to trick you and suspend disbelief and divert and do all of these different things, like we don't actually know that that's the bad guy, or you gave us this very obvious clue at the very beginning of the film and we're supposed to believe that it's not going to go that way. That's what frustrates me, is when you try to be, you try to pretend like you're not predictable, and we know you are, and you still end up being predictable. Like, then just don't try.
Like, they're throwing red herrings and whatnot. I think you mentioned earlier, like, but one of them is one I'm definitely going to talk about, where you have a character who has been found guilty of a crime or something, but 30 minutes before the movie's over, so you know damn well that that wasn't the actual killer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like there's too much movie left for this to be the end of it.
Really? It's going to take you 30 minutes to wrap the rest of this up? I think you didn't catch the right guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's different things that can happen that they try to divert your belief of where they are obviously going. And I'm fine if you're going to do that and then you actually take me in another direction. Like if you make me believe, oh, they're just being super predictable and we're just going to go down the same path and they're going to try to divert my attention, and they do divert my attention, But then they go all the way over to like person C, and that's the real murderer. And you're like, what the? I guess I should have figured that out sooner. Good job. You surprised me.
I mean, honestly, there aren't many filmmakers currently that really make surprising films. I would say Chris Nolan, Tarantino, because you never know what the hell is going to happen in his movies. I mean, there are very few filmmakers that make truly unique, surprising films. The majority of films that you get are predictable, and that doesn't make them bad. I'm still, as long as I'm entertained, like if I get 2 hours and I feel like, man, that was fun, or wow, that was really deep. I mean, like, how many freaking drug addict stories have you seen in your lifetime, or somebody overcoming a personal trauma? Those are kind of always the same. I'm in a dark place. Here's where my dark place. Here's all the things that happened in my dark place. Here's what caused my dark place. Let me work through it. I confront my whatever my troubles were. I'm out of my dark place. End of movie. That's predictable.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note that plot devices are intended to be used. That's how you get your story to move forward. And that's how you create progression in your story. So it's not a bad thing when you have a plot device. And there's only so many plot devices that have been used and created. They get regurgitated, and that's fine. Sometimes that's a predictable plot device. But the way that you develop your story around that plot device is what makes it, and I think predictable, people get hung up, like maybe we're getting hung up on the negative connotation with that word, because it doesn't always, like you said, it doesn't always mean it's a bad movie, but there's just different pieces where it's like, I was a little bit too distracted by your obvious intent to try and divert my expectations, that now I'm just annoyed that you didn't just play this out like it was, like we knew it all along. Like, if we want to use Angel Has Fallen again, that bad guy, you knew he was a bad guy.
Why do you keep picking on Angel Has Fallen? I feel bad for Gerard
Butler. People are going to want to go watch or listen to this Patreon episode now.
Oh, wink, there you
go. Well, you know, it's with some of this, it's starting to sound like, you know, when you're on the verge of breaking up with somebody, and that person is the one who's initiating the breakup, and they're trying to give you reasons as to why they're not happy in the relationship anymore. They start going into things like, I don't know, you're just too predictable. And that's what a lot of this feels like to me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's a way to sit there and say, it's shorthand for, I'm better than you. I'm more exciting than you, and you are not nearly as smart as I am. And that's what a lot of this criticism over predictability means. Now, my point in the whole idea of how predictability is distracting is that when there's obvious flaws in other places, the predictability is something you can't get past. And then when there's something where you have everything that works very well, who gives a shit? Let it be predictable. You're still getting a great story out of it, and why not just enjoy it? But again, it's a way for somebody who didn't appreciate something the way you did to just be like, I'm better than you.
I'm not trying to say that I'm better than anything. I certainly haven't written a damn movie, so who am I to talk? But
damn right.
Your tone says one thing. Yeah. Your mouth says another thing.
Hey, as we are all critics here, and I have expectations.
I am not a critic. I am a reviewer. You two are critics.
You're still a critic. To me, I have the expectation that if you're going to use a plot device and you want to try and surprise us, actually surprise us. Otherwise, you can use a predictable plot point. I don't care. Use it. But do not try and pretend like you're not doing that. That's like somebody saying, I was going to use an analogy that's really inappropriate for this podcast.
I'm sure there's some window licker out there who's really disappointed to sit there and hear that you did not appreciate a movie that they have absolutely adore because it's too predictable. Meanwhile, they're going, I really like that movie, Amanda. I don't know why you're making fun of me.
Let me sub a word in. I'm not going to use predictable anymore. I'm going to use lazy. Lazy is the word I feel like going with. That's what I think of when I'm talking about.
Feels like a predictable word.
Oh, right? My God. Yeah, predictable isn't always bad, though. Saw that coming
a mile away. No, it's not. And in fact, I will honestly tell you, I think predictable is the laziest form of criticism. It's just like an easy out. Like, why didn't you like a movie? Oh, it's predictable. What the hell does that mean? 95% of the movies you saw are predictable. I can watch 95% of the movies I've seen in the last 10 years and tell you how it's going to end. Comfortably 90%, maybe 95. So to tell me a movie is predictable tells me nothing. Why didn't the movie entertain you for whatever? Was it too boring? Were the performances bad? Did Did the pacing not move enough? Because if you're saying it's predictable, that's just an easy, all-encompassing, broad, lazy term that people use when they can't really think of legitimate criticism for a film. That's what I consider predictable. When people say it to me,
and if you're using just that word, I 100% support and endorse what you're saying. But if people say, I was bothered by the predictability in the film because X, Y, Z, that's not the negative connotation that you're taking with that word, which is why it's like so hard to even say that word around critics, because they're like, oh, well, F you, man. You can't just call something lazy. You better be better than that. And you're like, well, wait. Let me finish.
Holy shit.
My God, Amanda, you have a lot of feelings about this. Who
don't
hurt
you want
you?
Me to have energy, John? Would you like
energy
some?
Is one thing, but there's like not enough room in here right now for the amount of like vitriol you're holding for this.
We're in three different rooms. There's plenty of space.
I don't
John.
Think so.
We are social distancing.
Your space is closing up. It's looking like it's shining. That whole hotel is collapsing on itself.
I'm in a hotel. Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. What are some predictable plot devices that drive you nuts? Like, Amanda, you can go last because I think you've had the floor for about 25 minutes. But John, what do you think? What
says the guy who did the same.
What are predictable plot devices? Yeah, but I edit the show. What are the predictable plot devices that drive
you
nuts?
I did the post.
You know what? We talked about this in earlier in the show about horror movies and specifically Friday the 13th. Something that all newer horror movies have to do these days, because you know we have these little devices with us that anything goes wrong, we do boop 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 boop. Hello, please. You know, every single one of these movies, for whatever reason, the phone has to stop working. You know it has to stop working, because we all know that, you know, oh, I don't know what's really going on. No. Google says what's going on is this, and like this is how you fix it. Like, oh, yeah, and it has like it has something that says right here, here's the how to dispel demons in this incantation right here in Google.
The dark web exists for a reason.
How to make
guys.
The Ouija board demon go away. Google that. Oh, you just say Nosferatu.
Every single one of these movies. That's why I think some of the better horror movies go back to the 80s or maybe even like 90s as far as when they take place. But yeah, that's the one thing that drives me nuts is that every new movie that's a horror movie, suddenly phones don't work for some good god-awful reason.
Or in like murder mysteries do the same thing, drives me crazy. Cop shows do the same thing where it's like they almost forget that smartphones are a thing. Oh, it takes place in 2020. Okay. Well, we don't know where he was on the night of blah, 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 blah. Check his phone. Check his phone. Right. Every true crime podcast checks their phone. What? That's not the first thing you do?
Girlfriend can tell you where they were. Right? Just ask her. She's been tracking him for 2 years and he's never found out.
Oh, according to Find My Phone, he was right here. This mofo did it. Movie over. And also zooming, for me, this just kind of like connects. But zooming in and cleaning up fuzzy camera footage, using that to easily find a suspect.
Oh, yeah.
That, which always is like a shortcut for a plot point. Like, here's how we got him. Drives me nuts. Cop TV shows really do this more than movies do. Movies are a little smarter about it because TV's got to cut time. But you can't clarify a fuzzy picture. You can't make it better. Oh, there's all kinds of apps and stuff. No, not that recreate actual fuzzy.
you can't add pixels to an image. You can only subtract pixels from an image.
Exactly. So if you see a fuzzy license plate and you zoom in, guess what? Fuzzier. So it's it's not going to work.
It gets worse.
That one drives me nuts.
And an easy solution to Aaron's concern is just have clear pictures. Have good CCTV footage like they do. All the British shows have figured it out. They're like, oh, this is a clear image. Let's zoom in on the clear image of the cameras that are on every street.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I'm so good at this computer. You can't even see my fingers touching the keys. But I'm able to add more pixels, like John said, to a photo that you cannot do that to. Mm. Look at me.
Yeah, well, the Brits have the Queen, and the Queen insists that every picture is perfect.
Amanda, any pictures?
Of course.
Drop one here, and then we'll keep going until we run out, I guess.
Okay, so one of them that I have is fake deaths. I get so annoyed when they're like, oh, this person died. And then they come around and they're like, but they weren't really dead the whole time. And you're like, then explain to me how they survived 6 feet under in a coffin with no oxygen for 2 days.
Straw.
Straw. Straws are banned in California.
Straw.
Oh, no, now because of COVID, they have straws again.
Do they?
Wait, is this serious?
Yeah, this is serious.
Well, finally, COVID accomplished something good. I like straws. What do you want me to tell you? I don't.
Well, they survived. They fixed one environmental problem temporarily, and then they went back to another one. But anyway, that drives me insane.
Yeah,
it's just like you don't have, unless they have like a really good, reasonable explanation, which they almost never do, for how this person was not dead and how they didn't know that that person wasn't. You know, they never figured it out. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah, it makes me crazy. You know, I think the biggest one that drives me nuts about that is Fury not dying.
Oh, yeah. That was really annoying. It was really a cop-out, too.
It really was.
Oh, that's such a good good terminology for it, cop-out.
It takes the sting out of it. It takes the feeling, the momentum, the energy out of it when you have a character that fake dies, when they fies, or, yeah. When there's a
this
feth.
This one's too close to fries, and I love fries.
A feth. When there's a feth.
All right, so the one that makes me crazy, and there's only like, and actually this is going to be a kind of a hot take because we mentioned this movie a little bit ago, but this movie did this and it actually did it in a way that worked, but other movies have done it and it doesn't necessarily work. But Inception is a highly predictable movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it's a highly predictable movie is that they spent the first third of that movie telling you what they were going to do. And the second two thirds are all of them doing it. So there's no surprises, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, again, it's a movie that in which we are completely mesmerized by all the feats that and awesome cinematography and the amazing acting and all that. But any lesser movie did it, that would be a problem.
Yeah, if you have something else to help balance it, it makes it feel you are distracted by something else. Like you said in that film, you're distracted by the performances, by the innovative story, by the cinematography. Like everything was really great that it doesn't really matter if it's predictable.
Absolutely. I talked about the person where the person is basically a suspect and they die or whatever, and there's 30 minutes left of the movie. Basic Instinct's a prime example of that. But another thing that bothers me is every romantic comedy that has a pair have a forced conflict, only for somebody to beg for forgiveness in the end, sometimes dramatically, sometimes with a boombox, whatever the hell it is. I hate that. It's predictable and it's been done to death. Like, there's one thing to, like, oh yeah, I'm used to seeing this in romantic comedies, but it's in every romantic comedy. And when a movie doesn't, this is what's funny is when a romantic comedy doesn't do that, it's heralded as this original brilliance because it's not doing the one thing that every other romantic comedy does. It's so many times I'm like, that is not a brilliant movie, but people will say it is just because it's not doing the formula that's been done a bazillion times. So that's one of those predictable plot devices I can't stand. Just that whole contrived breakup. We'll work it out. I still love you. I mean, that's why I really love the breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. Yeah.
Vince Vaughn.
Because that kind of turned that concept on its ears. Like the whole movie, you think they're going to get back together and they don't. And I'm just like, oh, that's really smart. I like that. But once again, it's not brilliant. It's just different than every other movie of its kind.
You know, I watched that on one of my first times hanging out with Courtney, and we decided we were never going to watch that movie again.
Yeah, it's not a happy movie. It's not.
No, it's not.
No.
But, you know, a movie that does uses the tropes and you don't actually mind it so much is She's Out of My League. That's the one with Jay Baruchel.
That one's such a fun one.
Alice Eve, because they did it twice in that movie. They did it once when he didn't know how to act because he blew that oyster in his pants. And, you know, he didn't know how to act in front of her parents. And then the second time they did it was when, you know, they had that final fight where they did that whole talking about how she's, you know, he felt like she's way better than he is. And he was hoping that she had something wrong. That whole fight. I like the way they did it. And even then, it wasn't just that they had him go after her and try to win her back. They kind of went back after each other to win each other back.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that about that movie.
Speaking of romantic tropes, this kind of pulls off of Aaron's, but it's a little bit of a different one. I get so frustrated when the plot point for every romance film for a couple getting together is A and C want to get together, but that means cheating. A is cheating on B to get together. Well, somebody can.
I like
can,
that.
It's the same. It's so frustrating.
I don't think
me.
It really.
I'm all for that.
It doesn't happen that often, though, does it?
Where no. They cheat on somebody to get together with someone else?
Well, it's always like the people that are getting together, never like that you root for, are never the cheaters. It's always like their mate is doing it, and that's why
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you think about The Notebook, one of the most like iconic romance movies, she's cheating on her fiance at the time to get with Ryan Gosling when they find each other later on.
I get it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's did not happen yet, but
I don't remember
that.
Yeah,
no, that's something that it's hard for me to overlook after it's been done so many times. And it's like, it almost feels like solidifying the idea that you have to cheat on. You can only find love after you've been with someone else, that you have to be with someone else, and then you magically find upon your person.
I don't know. Sometimes you got to sit there and be like, wow, I'm miserable. I don't know why. Yeah. This person makes me happy. It's okay.
Maybe if they would have tried a little harder.
You guys are terrible. Oh, man. I hope your wives don't listen.
Well, if they really cared, they would, wouldn't they?
Hmm. They'll keep you right? happy.
Hmm.
You know, the person I'm cheating on my wife with listens to the show.
You don't want to say that too loud.
Okay, there's no possible way I'm cheating my wife. Have you seen me in person? I am not that pretty.
It's about time you admitted it. That's all I'm going to say.
So tell me if you heard this one before. You have two guys, right? And they're identical. Or they have two things and they're completely identical.
Oh boy.
But one's good and one's evil. And then all of a sudden, like for whatever reason, one of them disappears. And you think you have the good one, only to find out it's the bad one, a la Alien Covenant with the two Davids.
I hate twins. Yeah. I've gone on the record many times. If you have a big fan of The Blacklist, some people have alluded to, maybe Red Reddington is a twin. Okay. I hate twins. I will literally hate any plot that uses the concept you just spoke of, John. So I'm 100% with you. I think that is the laziest plot development.
Right.
Oh, that's so predictable for you to use the word lazy.
Yeah, that's what those things are, lazy and predictable. There's no other way to say it. Twins are the... Nobody's that identical. Go find a pair of identical twins. You're going to notice some... Like, I love movies where the people are... They're humping both brothers because they couldn't tell them apart. What? What the hell are you talking about? Yes, you can tell them apart. There's some minor thing that you know is different about the person. They are not that identical. It's not like you bought two freaking number two lead pencils. It's they're living beings, man. There's something that differentiates them. Oh, he drives me crazy.
It's not like he started the conversation with, here, put this blindfold on, because that means he's going to have somebody else on you.
I saw that movie. You know what? Let's turn it more to a positive. What are your favorite predictable plot devices? What are the ones that you do like? Amanda?
Well, it feels like everyone should probably love this. If you don't, you don't know what it means, because they're always in your movies now and became pretty infamous through Hitchcock. But the MacGuffins, where it's basically something that the characters on screen are chasing after. Pulp Fiction, The Briefcase, Raiders, The Ark. I mean, like, you are the characters on screen are trying to get to something. It drives them. And you don't always know what it is, what it looks like, or all the details, but you know it's important and you have to get to it.
Well, I would say the Ark is not a MacGuffin. The MacGuffin specifically, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, film scholar, because you went to college, but for film. But a MacGuffin is a nondescript item that people are chasing. That's not central to the plot. Where I would say the Ark of the Covenant was central to that plot.
Right. Ah! So
I mean, you could argue it either way, but that's fair.
If you're gonna go MacGuffin, you go
Hitchcock.
Well, I gave an example.
Tarantino. Hitchcock developed that term.
Right. Tarantino did it pretty well with the suitcase and
didn't I say that?
She literally just said that.
Did she?
Yes.
That was the first thing I said.
That was literally the first thing she said.
Well, I mean, that's a good MacGuffin right there.
Yeah,
it is.
Still, I wasn't listening to her.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But no, it's something.
Look, she's been talking so much this episode. I just like zoned out.
Then I'll be quiet, Johnny.
I just mean it in the sweetest way possible.
Oh,
keep talking.
Came out okay. that way. Came
you don't
out,
want me.
You, what you said came out like she described predictable. That's all I'm going to say. No, that's a great point. MacGuffins are a fun plot element, and I love because Mission Impossible does it quite a bit too, and it's
oh totally.
I dig that. I mean, I don't know why people get mad when they're like, I want to know what the thing is. Why? Sometimes it's fun to just use your imagination on what the thing is. Unless it's lost, I don't want to imagine that much. You know, I'd like some answers.
Oh, don't start that.
You know, you also get it done in the way of Marvel movies with the big beam in the sky. That's the MacGuffin that you end up using usually.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they just Tesseract. Okay, what is it? It's a big power square. What does that do? I don't know. It's just power square.
Oh, it just does power stuff because it's Tesseract.
Exactly. That's a good one, Amanda.
Window licker. I mean, what?
I am a sucker for traps that are required to pass to progress to find hidden treasure. I know.
Oh, that's a good one.
They're always ridiculous. They're always predictable. They're just a weird thing. And you know, our hero is always going to get past them, but I'm like a total sucker for him. So whenever a movie's like, I'm going to have traps that he has to get by. And it's always so stupid because it's like, who would put the time in for this? This is just nonsense. And there's so much effort that's involved to even make this a possibility to work at the time, let alone 6,000 years later. So it just doesn't make sense. But I am a sucker for those.
You know, 6,000 years ago, all they had was time on their hands. They didn't have Netflix.
That's true.
They didn't have all the stuff. They had some guy with a whip going, you do this. And they went, okay, okay, yeah, I agree.
Okay. John, any favorites?
One of my favorites is actually, so you got a movie in which you know the guy you're looking at is a bad guy. You know that your heroes are hanging out with the bad guy, and yet everything that person is doing is good. And you spend the entire movie going, when's the turn going to happen? When's the turn going to happen? When's the turn going to happen? And finally it does happen, and you're like, oh my God, that's so cool. And the two movies that I thought of where it happened was, so Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2. Or Part D for the people who really like it.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
The Kurt Russell, when he made the switch over to being the bad guy of the whole thing, which was really cool, the way he did it for them. And then, I know you don't agree with this, but in Spider-Man Far From Home, I spent a good part of that movie like, isn't Mysterio a bad guy? What the hell are they doing? What the hell is happening? How is they really got me with the Mysterio is a good guy thing. And then when the twist happened, I actually had the balls to sit there and say to myself for a few minutes, I knew it! I knew they were going to do this to me! And yet, no, I really fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
Really?
I did.
You read the same comics I did, man.
I know. That's why I was like, you know, maybe when's he going to be a bad guy? Because I know he's a bad guy. I know that happened. But I've been fooled before. And this is one of those moments where they fooled me.
He thought it was going to be like a Mandarin.
Right.
He's such a cool villain. No, he's not.
He's Trevor. I did a thing in the West Village. Don't go in there.
My next one that I really like is
I do want to add, in terms of villains, you're talking about villains that you brought up. I really love a good monologue. If it's entertaining, the right actors cast, and it's written well, even though I know it's stupid, and why would somebody be telling you all the things they've done? Why are they telling you the last 5 minutes of the movie? Why are they doing this soliloquy, this monologue? But I really dig it if it's the right cast.
Is that really a plot device, though?
Yeah, because it's...
How does it turn the plot if it's at the end of the movie?
Because there's no reason for it, and they would totally be caught if they would not do the monologue. So it definitely changes the plot by doing this villain monologue, and it's always a ridiculous thing, but I like it.
Because the bad guy does the monologue, the guy gets away, and he's like, okay, well, first he said this because I wrote everything down.
or they have to explain how they have to do expositionality, where they're explaining their motives and everything else. Nobody really gives a crap. Nobody cares.
If you wouldn't have done this, I wouldn't be standing here today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my daddy touched me right there.
Right.
What? Yeah.
Here's the giant doll to show you.
Oh, no. So a red herring where you have something that's trying to, it's trying to point you in a different direction. You see this a lot in mysteries. So I feel like Sherlock is an obvious example where it's like, oh, if you were to walk into a room and somebody is dead and the dude is standing there and you're like, oh, well, this guy is obviously the murderer. But then there's like another clue that could point you in another direction, and some of them will deviate you. You know, Harry Potter is a great one with Sirius Black. You thought that he was going to be the bad guy, and he turns out to be not as much of the bad guy. And those are really fun because it takes you on a journey. Sometimes they can really surprise you, and that's really enjoyable to me. And I think if you do red herrings at least moderately well, it's still fun to kind of travel along and figure out what's right and what's not. Even if you're like, that's definitely not it. Here's what I think it is.
You know, I really like that, you know, because I was going to actually use this as a way to mirror my whole thing about Stop Me If I Heard This. You have two things look exactly alike. But in the movie Life, at the very end, when you have the two different capsules heading in two different directions, and, you know, it turns out one has the monster in it and one doesn't. And the one with the monster, you know what? Spoilers. Ends up landing on Earth, whereas the one that doesn't have the monster just gets spit out into space where the person obviously dies out there alone in the stupid capsule. Again, the way they pull that off is a nice little surprise at the end of the movie for a movie that had some decent scares and some decent jump action to it. And then to really surprise you by having an ending like that was pretty cool.
Saw, I think, is another great one.
Oh, yeah. Saw. Another thing that... And then we'll move on to listener comments. So I think we've each had a couple. Any storyline where a dad's estranged from his kids and then they come together at the end, it always reminds me of my dad. And I weep openly, like probably those people in those stupid romantic comedies. It's just it's just something that gets me every time. And so whenever you have a dad who's not a great dad, or he comes around, or he finds his way, or... And he reunites with his kids. Or there's some moment of coming together, father and son especially, is what gets me. It's just like reminds me of my dad, and I just like every time.
That's a really good one. Yeah. It's sweet. Can I add one quick one?
Sure.
Especially in horror films, where you're like, don't open that. Why would you open that? Why would you still move into this house when you've been told that like 1,200 people have died there? They still open the door. They still go and live in the house. They still do this or do that, even though they're completely deviated away, and they still go because those are fun stories, and it's always really enjoyable to be like, don't do that. Stop. Halt. You're so stupid. And I love doing that. It's just so much fun in a horror movie where you're like, I know it. I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. You know what's going to happen, and you're going to do it anyway.
One that I always have fun with is Chekhov's insert item here. So, yeah. You know, Chekhov's kick down the stairs, or Chekhov's gun, which is what it's normally called. You know, that's one that I always have fun with, because I sit there and I see the item and I'm like, how is that going to come back up later? Right.
And they do a nice little zoom in shot on the letter opener. Why do I care about the letter opener? I don't know, but it's going to be in somebody's neck later. I can feel
it. The pencil. The Dark Knight. The pencil.
No, I'll be honest. I didn't know what they were going to use the pencil for.
But sometimes you don't know what they're going to use it for, and you're just like, but you know this is going to happen in a second. Something's going to happen.
It's going to matter. All right, let's go into our listener comments, and we'll be heading on out of here. Amanda, who you got?
I have Ty Nelson, and he's using a fun quote from Roger Ebert, who once said, it's not what a movie is about, it's how it is about it. So I'd say there is no definitive answer. It should be a case-by-case basis. Look at the most recent Star Wars trilogy. Hold on your pants, guys. There's more that he's saying. I loved The Force Awakens because it gave me exactly what I wanted and felt like an original trilogy film with new characters. I love The Last Jedi because it went for surprises and gives the characters an identity that didn't just rehash what came before. Then I was mildly disappointed in Rise of the Skywalker because it tried and failed at doing both. And I love that this happens all within one franchise, but I think it's true that it is not really what the movie is about, because all of the Star Wars films realistically are about the same thing, but how they do it is what makes a big difference.
Sounds good.
Yeah, the Star Wars film feels like something where you hang out there for the characters, and you have the story down in your mind so much. So it's just a matter of, like, those are cool people you want to spend time with. And that's what I like about the Star Wars.
Yeah, but I'll be honest, like, the last three films have suffered from audiences, from the quote unquote fan base. I mean, I'm starting to get a little leery of even using that term with them anymore sometimes, because I mean, people are so negative with it. But I mean, they took some chances in The Last Jedi. Backlash. They went back to nostalgia and predictability. Backlash. It's like, I don't think you can win with that franchise anymore. It's almost like, just stop calling stuff Star Wars and just have lightsabers. I mean,
then they'll still get backlash because they didn't use Star Wars in the name.
Yeah, that's a start. You know what? Start, just screw with them. Just start calling them Star Trek and throw lightsabers into that. That'll just be fantastic.
Oh man,
do it.
Another episode of Space Wizards and Laser Swords.
I'd watch it.
Space Force.
John, who you got?
So Rita Agrella says, as a fan of romantic comedies, I'd say predictable plots can be entertaining if done well, especially for certain movie genres. And I completely agree. If done well, they're really entertaining. And as the romantic comedy fan in my house, there's a lot of romantic comedies that I find that are very predictable, but because of who's in the cast or because of what's going on in the story or what kind of different storytelling they're doing, they end up being more enjoyable. As She's Out of My League was one that I mentioned. Another one that's really great is Jexy that I saw recently. Is another great romantic comedy. The Big Sick is a fantastic one. Mm-hmm. So again, all different ways of doing the storytelling that work out well for something that is ultimately predictable.
Yeah, definitely.
When we asked him, we said, you know, does a movie have to have surprises or is predictable necessarily a bad thing? Adam Schreiber said you can do both. Example, Deadpool 2. Predictable movie, but still had surprises by doing what it did to X-Force. Great example.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Great example. And Stefan Smidebeck, he kind of similarly echoed what I said, but I think he says it, honestly, a little better. I don't know. I mean, a movie is supposed to bring me into its world, into the zone, I guess. It's not about the plot. It's about how the story is told. Interesting characters, visual expression, good dialogues. So in theory, a story can be about absolutely nothing as long as something interesting is taking place on the screen.
You know what I like about the way he said that is that it reminds me of the movie Basic, which is kind of a predictable story as well. Mm-hmm. But there's a line that repeats itself throughout the whole movie, which is just got to tell the story right.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. 100%. 100%. That's going to do it. I think that was an interesting topic, man. I don't know why I've never had that topic before. You'd think after like 9 years, we would have run across predictable plots before, but nope, sure haven't.
Maybe we're just getting lazy now.
Oh, I see what you did there. I see.
That, kids, is what we call full circle. All right. Any recommendations real quick before we head on out of here?
If you're a fan of the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt show on Netflix, they did another one of those make your own adventure show or movies on Netflix using Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt versus the Reverend. And the story itself is cute, adorable, and fun like Kimmy Schmidt is. My favorite part is actually the use of Jon Hamm, who is wildly underused in Hollywood for comedy.
Yes.
He should be in more comedy. He needs to be in 100% more comedy. Put him in every comedy, and he shows every reason why in that movie for sure.
Can I watch that if I didn't watch the show?
No, because there's a lot of throwback stuff to what happened in the show.
One of the movies that I saw, which was on US Netflix, after the recent news of Lynn Shelton's passing, who is a director and was also together with Marc Maron. She has done a lot of different things. Most recently that I would have known her from is Little Fires Everywhere. She directed about half the season. But there was this film called Laggies. Did either of you ever see that?
Uh-uh. No.
It's got Keira Knightley, Chloe Grace Moretz, and Sam Rockwell. And it's a really cute movie, but it's got a weird, super weird plot. And it's basically Keira Knightley's character is kind of going through some things where she needs to find herself and she needs to figure out what she's going to do with her career. And she goes to her best friend's wedding, and her boyfriend proposes to her. And she also catches her dad cheating on her mom. Mm. So she just like takes a week away. And that night she runs into Chloe Grace Moretz's character and her friends who are like kids in high school. And she hangs out with them and she starts to like become really close friends with Chloe Grace Moretz and stays at her house for a week. And the story really develops. And then Sam Rockwell is Chloe Grace Moretz's father. And so there's like this triangle of friendship and a lot of really weird and comedic moments. And it was really fun and I was really impressed by it. So check it out. Laggies on Netflix.
Cool. I would love to recommend a bunch of stuff, but I've pretty much talked about the stuff I saw. I've been catching up on Bosch though. I am hammering that show away. It gets better. You're right, John. It gets better every season, even though you didn't even know there were three more seasons of it. And I did watch the first episode of Devs, which was an FX show that came out a little bit ago, but is now on Hulu. I do recommend it, but strap in because you got to have patience for it. It is definitely a slow burn in storytelling. It's about it's kind of like the development of Rehoboam. If you watch the most recent season of Westworld, where it's this very predictive AI, this developer goes missing. I won't say what happens, but and his girlfriend is kind of looking into it. And he was a developer and he was working on very predictive AI. That's all I'm going to say. It's just, it's an interesting dynamic. It's revolving around quantum computing. You really should at least know a little bit of computer science to really be able to follow the show. Cause there's a lot of lingo there, but it's really interesting. Devs. Whew, man, I think that's going to do it for this episode, but we've got a whole teachable minute coming up. Before we get to it, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our Facebook group is The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook. Our website is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You can always email us at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. If you got a chance, rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at RJenDraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This on Twitter. Me and the Blacklist Exposed and presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. And by the way, if you're a Blacklist fan, we just had an interview with the showrunner that should be up at the Blacklist Exposed where we talk about the season finale. Okay, whole teachable minute. It's my turn. Remember, we are taking 2 weeks off, so we'll be back in a couple weeks.
So you better really teach us.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you, here's what I learned this past week, and it was a heartbreaking lesson. I learned that nostalgia is not enough. It's just not. I think we've all been enthralled by something that we loved as kids that was being brought back. Maybe a little fun, little reunion, a reunited video, you know, kind of Back to the Future, the Goonies, they had that. But Scoob taught me that there has to be something more than just bringing back what I love, because it doesn't always work. Great story, genius idea, but just throwing down those little doses of quick nostalgia isn't working for me anymore. I officially need more.
It sounds like they really just wanted to figure out a way to bring that Hanna-Barbera world together, because that was part of the intention.
They threw it all in a blender and said, we're going to make a Hanna-Barbera world instead of a Scooby-Doo movie. And yeah, it just broke my heart a little bit. And a little piece of me died.
That's why I was really surprised. I mean, the Blue Falcon was something that made me want to see it. But then when I saw that Tracy Morgan was Captain Caveman, and I was like, I need to see it now, but you have halted me in my place.
I stopped watching it. I started and I stopped.
Yeah, you said you couldn't even get into it, but I still say the first half hour was really good. I mean, that was really very, very Scooby-Doo. And even though it was a little cheesy and cutesy, I thought it was still really, really interesting. And then it fell apart. But what are you going to do? You know what? I don't want to end that on a down note. Guys, I want you to have a wonderful couple of weeks. You know, you've got the holiday Memorial Day weekend, and I'm sure everybody's planning on going nowhere. So stay inside. Go watch all the stuff that we just recommended. There's a ton of other stuff we recommended the last few weeks.
Grill out.
Yeah, grill out and then watch in. That's what I say. Boom. And remember, the next time you head to a theater in July to see Tenet, hopefully, please God, buy popcorn. Please, God.
Keep the theaters alive, man.
Does God listen to this podcast? Please, God.
Can we send it to him? Can someone share it?
Is George Burns free? Are you dying? Are you going to send it to him directly? We figured out a way.
I was going to say something snarky about God, but I think he just tried to strike me down.